Okay. So did you, other times, you ever have meat and potatoes for breakfast?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What kind of meat?
Well, the regular diet was salt pork, warmed over potatoes. Mm-hmm. Pancakes, or... That is, most of the places.
Mm-hmm. They served much bacon for breakfast when you were young.
Not too much. There was, they'd take part of the bacon and have it smoked, but of course they'd use the most of that, but the salt pork would keep indefinitely as long as it was in the brine. So that was a stable meat.
Not too much beef was eaten when you were young.
Well, a farmer would always kill a cow or a heifer and get that, but you couldn't keep it in the summer, you know.
How did you store it at your house?
Well, after I was married and had a home of my own, I used to have a great big bin of oats. And you'd cut it into chunks, wrap it up, put a note it was a stew beef or roast.
What'd you wrap it in?
Paper. Mm-hmm. But you'd freeze it first, solid. Then you'd wrap it in paper and bury it in the oats.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you freeze it?
Well, outdoors.
Outdoors.
You wouldn't kill it until it was wintertime. Uh-huh. Then you'd bury it in the oats. And your wife or whoever was there wanted to, they'd go out and paw into the oats and come up, and if they wanted to roast, well, they could tell it, whichever they wanted, and take it in. Mm-hmm. And you'd have all the beef you wanted. Of course, they used to make a lot of sausage. Put that away, homemade sausage.
What kind of, beef or pork or both?
Beef and pork together, same mm-hmm. as you'd buy at the store now. Mm-hmm.
What they used to make into, were they using intestines or?
Well, no, they'd make it. I don't know just how they did wrap it, tell you, whether it was a wax cloth or what, I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever eat blood pudding?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did your grandmother make it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Did you ever eat it?
Mm-hmm. How did your grandmother store her meat besides the pork?
Well, you could freeze it when it got cold enough, you know, you like your roast and so on. And as I tell you, you put it into a bin of oats or bury it in sawdust or something like that.
Did many people have ice houses around here?
Not at that time, but a few years after that, people made some ice houses and harvest the ice in the winter, or cool the milk in the spring or something like that. You know, in the spring, water spring.
Right. What would you have for dinner? Would dinner be your big meal or?
Well,
when you were a boy? Which is bigger, dinner or supper for a meal?
I know, about the same for me. I'd eat all I could every time. If I liked it, I'd eat more. If I didn't, I didn't eat so much.
Mm-hmm. Did you acquire new tastes when you worked at the hotel? Hotels, did you have different food up there?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Was it very different from what the food you were eating?
No.
Yeah?
No.
Did they serve you the same food that the guests ate, or?
Yes, only it was one day old. The pies that wasn't pies and cakes and so on that wasn't used that day for the guests went to the help the next day. But they were really good, because they were made for a millionaire.
Right.
But we wasn't in the millionaire class, we was in the second class the next day.
Right.
But we got good food.
All you wanted?
All you wanted. Mm-hmm. It was put on in big platters or big bowls. You just pass it to whoever wanted it and have all you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Did your grandmother cook a great deal or?
Yes, she was an excellent cook.
Mm-hmm. What was your best dish? Do you remember a?
Oh, I don't know. Christ, I liked everything.
Did you use many home remedies when you were young?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Had a cold, had ginger tea. Mm-hmm. Throw that in there.
Did you grow her own ginger?
No.
No?
And castor oil was her favorite remedy. That was the customary all over the country, I guess.
Yeah. How about if you cut yourself, what would you do for it?
Well, it depends on how you do it. Mm. If you was barefoot and stepped onto a rusty rake or a rusty nail, why, you'd wash it thoroughly. They had always had carbolic acid in the house at that time. Take a solution of carbolic acid and wash it. Then she'd take a slice of salt pork and bind that onto the wherever the nail went in with a cloth. And that'd draw the poison out and it'd heal.
The other cuts, what would you do for them?
Well, if you cut your finger, probably put some iodine on it, something like that. But
did you use any other herbs or anything you gathered outside for, in case you had, say, a sore throat or anything like that? Anything that you grew in the garden that you used?
Not that I know. Not that I know.
If you had sore eyes, would you do anything for sore eyes or?
No, we never had any.
Toothaches?
Well, she'd put, I don't know, she put something into the tooth. There was a cavity in it. And put a hot cloth on the side of your face. If it kept getting worse, why, they'd pull it out.
Where are the closest doctor or dentist? Who would do it? Doctor or dentist? Or?
There used to be a doctor or dentist, Dr. Hubert Stickney, here. He had an office, up, which is a post office now upstairs. Mm-hmm. And he was a good dentist. He didn't have very modern equipment. His drill was set up on the thing, and he used to tread it with his foot like he would these old-fashioned sewing machines. Mm-hmm. And he'd get his arm around the back of your neck, and he'd drill. And of course, the drill's like, damn, he'd pull it out and stick it back in again and drill. And his foot was going to furnish manpower. And he never used anything to put on your tooth to pull it. He locked his arm around your head and under your chin and yep, come. Never give anybody any, what do you call it, antiseptic?
Antiseptic.
Yeah, never of any kind. Huh. But he was a powerful man and out come the tooth.
Was Constable a large place when you were a boy?
Oh, it is a lot larger than it is today. There was two good-sized stores right here.
Who owned them? Excuse me, who owned them?
Nels Obley and Fred Dudley. One, and Harvey Dudley run the other one, which is a brick store. Now I'll tell you, Aubrey and Dudley might be interesting. You go in there, and they never had a paper sack in the store. If you wanted 10 pounds of sugar, he done it up in a piece of paper. He'd tear it off the roll, put his paper on the thing, and weigh you up 10 pounds of sugar. Now that's something of interest. Mm-hmm. And he'd do that up and wrap it, and it was perfect. You could drop it and it would never break or anything. Now you tell that to a lot of these storekeepers, and they just couldn't do it if they wanted to. You know, it was a trick in that, must have been. But he used to have sugar all come in a barrel. And he'd scoop in and get it and keep putting it on the scales, and you got your 5 or 10 pounds, whichever you wanted. Then the crackers, the Boston crackers, they was around, about a half an inch thick, they came in a barrel. Mm-hmm. You wanted that. Or oatmeal, everything was done up in a package on wrapping paper.
Did he have clothing in the store too?
No. Oh, he did have shoes and boots, mittens and such as that, but not a great variety. You could always buy a good heavy shirt or a heavy pair of pants and things like that.
Did your mother or your grandmother make you clothing when you were young?
No. She used to knit my socks, my mittens.
Did she card her own wool?
No.
Bought it. What other businesses were there in Constable at that time?
Well, there was seven blacksmith shops.
Seven?
Seven blacksmith shops. You want the names of them?
Yeah, if you can remember.
Well, Gid Gokey had a blacksmith shop. Louis Florey had a blacksmith shop. J. Johnny Bean had a blacksmith shop. Mose Denisi had a blacksmith shop. God, that's a little short. I can get you. Well, there's some at Trout River, and Trout River is Constable. You know, it's all the one town.
Mm-hmm. Oh, seven in the town of Constable.
Yes, in the town. Mm-hmm. I know Charlie Tuggy had a blacksmith shop down there, and I can't think of the other fellas. Mm-hmm. And there was two sawmills right here in the Constable Village.
Who owned those?
Cole McNeil run one. That was an old English gauge sawmill. The saw just went up and down.
Uh-huh.
And
water powered.
Oh, water powered. And Pete Denisi owned one as you're coming down from home. One up there. Then there was
his was a regular circular saw. Mm-hmm. Where did he get the logs to cut?
Oh, this country is all full of logs. Mm-hmm. Every farmer had cut out logs to get what lumber he wanted and shingles and everything else.
But the sawmills didn't own land they logged.
No. They done custom sawing.
Right. Okay.
And then there was two or three butter factories made butter. The farmer would take his milk there and they'd separate it. He'd bring the skim milk home for his pigs.
Mm-hmm. Where are they located?
One is right here in Constable Village. And then there was one down the Sulphur Spring Road. And there's Fay's factory over here on the town line between Burke and Constable.
Mm-hmm. What was the one on the Sulphur Spring? Who owned that one, can you remember?
I think Dave Tuggy owned it. John Alwyn run it, I know, after a while, for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Any other businesses in Constable when you were young?
There was a grist mill here.
Mm-hmm. Who owned that?
A man by the name of Bruce. Oh, it changed hands once or twice. And then a man by the name of Bishop had it one time. And, I can't think of names, you know. I met a man, if I was talking to you on my own, my neighbor come along, and I wanted to introduce, I couldn't think of his name half the time. It's embarrassing, but I guess age does that to you.
Yeah. Any other businesses?
Well, there were starch factories, but they wasn't running.
When you were?
When I was on Earth. They'd been running before.
How many were those couple?
There's two right here in Constable Village.
What, you hear much about them? People talk about them much, or?
Well, you never hear them speak about it now. That's a thing of the past.
No, when you were young.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What did they do? Did you ever hear exactly?
Well, they made starch.
Yeah.
From potatoes. I knew a man by the name of Harry Devenport that raised a lot of potatoes. And on this sandy land, of course, it was new then, and to produce a crop. And he sold them for 10 cents a bushel. And he thought he got an awful good price and was satisfied. 10 cents a bushel to raise them and draw them to the starch factory.
Mm-hmm. Any other businesses?
Yes, there was a small place where they used to tan hides. Owned by the Devenports.
Is that right here in Constable?
Yeah. And then Charlie Devenport, he was a painter. He used to paint buggies and wagons and cutters, and so was that.
Did your father ever work for Devenport?
No, my father never worked. He was sick when he came out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. He came up here, but never he worked. Died shortly afterwards.
Was Hyde's a big business around here when you were young, or?
Hides?
Yeah, tanneries.
No, there's quite a large tannery in Malone, but there's just this small one here. But
how many men? Couple?
Oh, it was just a family affair, probably a couple.
Mm-hmm.
father and son, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hotel here in town.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that? Right in the...
Right in the village.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm Hutchins from the hotel.
Was it a big hotel or small? Or?
It was quite a big hotel.
What happened to it?
It burnt, but he built another one. The building is there yet.
Mm-hmm. Did most of these other buildings burn too? Like the starch factory?
No, they was mostly tore down for the timber and lumber. I don't remember of any of them ever being burnt.
Was there a fire company in Constable?
No.
What about schools? Was there a big school in Constable, or?
Well, there's quite a good sized school, I'd say.
And you were going?
Four rooms. Anyway, you'd go from the first grade to the sixth, and then you was ready for high school, you'd go to Malone.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of local schools, you know, district schools.
Right.
One-room schools.
Mm-hmm. Being so close to the border, did you go to Canada very often when you were young?
Not when I was young, no.
Was there much travel back and forth between here and Canada, do you think, when you were...
Not as a young man,
uh-huh.
No. When bootlegging days come on, there was quite a lot of travel then.
Were you living around here during that time?
I was.
Was there a lot of bootleggers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did they make a lot of money at it, or was it a...
Some of them made a lot of money and some of them lost. But it was exciting anyway.
Mm-hmm. Any stories you remember of that time?
Well, I think I was the first man that ever drew a load of liquor.
Really?
In this locality. I was in the meat business.
Yeah.
I had a truck. And I used to take eggs and poultry and that stuff to Saranac Lake, Tupper Lake, you know,
yeah,
for the
right.
Hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And it went dry on a Saturday night and everybody was supposed to turn their liquor in. Nobody's supposed to have a drop in the house or anywhere. But I used to sell produce, we'll say that, to the Grand Union Hotel. I don't think I ought to name the man who's running it. He's dead though.
Okay.
But Sunday morning he drove into my yard from Saranac. And he says, I think I'm the only damn fool in Saranac Lake. He had a big hotel. And he says, I haven't a drop of liquor, and everybody else has got a lot of it at the hotels. And he says, you can buy it in Valleyfield for so much a case. And he says, I wish you'd go down and get me about 40 cases and bring it up. Well, I had a half-ton Chevrolet truck. And God, I says, that's all right, but I haven't got the money. I didn't have, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like I'd go to your farm and you had 2-3 cows. I didn't want them then, but I'd buy them, you know, leave them till I wanted them. And, well, he says, here's the money. So I got up the next morning, went to Valleyfield. First time I was ever in Valleyfield. And bought the liquor. And I had it up to him about 1 o'clock that day. So that is about the first liquor I think was ever drawn. It was drawn Monday and went dry Saturday night.
Yeah. How did you get across the border?
I just took a wood road, country road,
oh.
Maybe come up through somebody's pasture or something like that.
You didn't hide the
liquor?
Yeah.
Well, probably covered it over with a street blanket or something like that.
Yeah,
but
mm-hmm.
They used to pack it in a brand sack or feed bags, you know. And
did you continue to do that after that? Or?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. All during Prohibition?
Yeah, it is better than the meat market.
Was it profitable for you?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Were you worried about being caught, or?
Well, naturally, I was always a little suspicious and watching out all the time.
Mm-hmm. How would you do it during the? Well, it got pretty kept pretty good close track of the border after a while, didn't they?
Well, at that time, all the custom men and all the peace officers, and then they formed what they called the Border Patrol. And, of course, at that time, there were a lot of cars all through here.
Mm-hmm.
And they was always out looking to scout on, see who they could find and catch.
Were you ever caught?
Yes.
What happened?
I paid a fine, that's all.
Was it a big fine or?
$500.
Mm-hmm. How'd they catch you?
Well, it was on the road somewhere. I can't tell you just where it was. But it didn't put me out of business, though.
No? During the height of Prohibition, the middle of Prohibition, how would you cross the border? The same way, or?
Well, yes.
Over somebody's...
Well, you see, these farms joined, the Canadian farm would join up to the American farm.
Yeah.
And all them farmers had a road down through the pasture field to go down into Canada. You could buy your grain down there for cattle for about half what you could up here. And if you knew where them roads, you could come up and go right along.
Did the Border Patrol know about these roads too, or?
Yes, but they couldn't watch them all.
Uh-huh.
And of course, if you was coming up through and you give a farmer, say, here, here's a couple of dollars, I want to come up this afternoon, he'd be watching for you. Mm-hmm.
Was there ever any violence over that, or you know of?
Not in this locality that I know of. Mm-hmm. Oh, they'd shoot at you.
Oh, they would?
Oh, yes.
Were you ever shot at?
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Did you enjoy that era?
Hmm?
Did you enjoy that time?
Well, not particularly at that time when they're shooting at me.
Yeah. Didn't stop you though.
No.
No.
It, well, Lee Bova was a farmer over here, a young man, about my age. And he went to Utica and he bought a new Buick Coupe, one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he come back and he says, you know, I've got all the money I have in this car. He says, if you'll furnish the liquor, I'll furnish the car, and we go 50-50. Well, I says, all right, I'll do that. So we went down, we got the liquor, and we come up through North Burke at that time. And dirt road, you know.
Yeah.
And we come across this little bridge and it was making that turn. You had to go up a grade to make this swing. But we was driving with no lights on. But when we just went to go up this hill, these officers set back, their cars was off the highway in the field, and they threw their lights on and flashlights and they hollered halt and so on. I says, throw it into second and by God give her the gun. We put our lights out. Well, we had them off anyway. And we started. Well, it was a hell of a rough road from there up, that's from Doherty's Corner. And you could keep turn to your right and come up, but there's a you could go straight ahead, but there's a terrible road. And I says, keep the straight road, the rough road, see? But anyway, to make a long story short, they put 16 bullet holes in the coupe. And we used to take a bag and fill it up, and it'd be about that thick, you know, two cases of two thicknesses of the bottles, and fill the trunk. But when these shots was coming through, you could hear the glass breaking. Yeah. There was going your profit and your liquor. And finally, board is rougher than hell. We were going as fast as we dared to go. And I said, by God, I cut myself. I thought my hind had gone on with a piece of glass. And but we kept it going. So I knew a certain gate. We got there, I jumped off, opened the gate, and I told him to keep going through the fields. Well, it was about a half mile long. And he went down through, I shut the gate, and I took my coat to brush the tracks a little, you know. And we went down, but I hadn't cut myself on a piece of glass, as I thought. The bullet had come in the back, gone through the back of the seat,
mm-hmm.
and it hit me just about a half an inch from the backbone, and went right down through the floorboard.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to go to the doctor or?
No, I had somebody doctored up. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to go to a doctor, he might be squealing on you for
all. So you were running the border all during Prohibition, though?
All through Prohibition.
Mm-hmm. Were most people around here?
No. There's a lot of them come from Utica, and all over the different country. Mm-hmm. Come up here, get loaded up and go back.
Did you ever work with anybody else on
no.
that?
No. Mm-hmm. That was the first and the last trip with him.
Didn't like his Buick beyond that.
He went back to Buick the next day and traded in for a new one, but he was all done with it. Bootlegging.
Did your wife like you being in that business?
Well, I don't suppose she did, but we had 13 children, and
13 children?
I had to make all the money I could. Mm. She never knew where I was, never knew where I was going, and never knew where I was doing or what I was doing.
You never told her?
Never told her, and she never asked. Because she didn't want to know, and I'm damn sure I didn't want her to know. Mm-hmm. I figured if they come and went to quizzing her, they couldn't get any information if she didn't know.
Did they ever come?
Not that I know of, to her.
Mm-hmm. Did your neighbors know you were doing
that? Oh, yes.
They all knew, huh?
Yeah. I lived right near the minister up here. That's that big brown house.
Yeah.
That's where I live. The minister's the next house.
Did most people have liquor in their homes during Prohibition? Right?
Not much. Mm-hmm. In this locality, I mean.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them in Malone at it, because I used to sell it to them.
How would you sell it to them? Go from house to house?
No. The doctors and lawyers and them kind of fellows, they'd give me an order. I want a case of scotch or a case of rye, whatever it was. Or maybe two, and if they had a banquet or supper, they'd want two or three. I'd deliver it to their home or wherever they wanted it.
What was the going price on booze at that time?
Well, there's the cheap booze and there's the good booze. Mm-hmm. Hegg and Hegg, that's about the best scotch. You could buy that in Valleyfield for $55 a case. Mm-hmm. And I used to get $125.
So how much would you make, say, in one run across the border? You must make quite a bit, then.
Well, I used to draw from 35 to 40 cases to a load mm-hmm. of liquor.
Yeah.
I never bothered with beer to hell with that.
Yeah. So how much would you make for a run about?
Well, you could figure it out. $55 and I got $125. Mm-hmm. But now this was, you can't call it just running across the border. Mm-hmm. I had a good trade in Manchester, New Hampshire. And...
A good trade. Did you send it over to Manchester?
I drove it over, the truck.
Oh.
And there's a millionaire down there. And... So anyway, that's where I got it. Well, you can figure it out. 55 and I got 125. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's an expensive traveling. Mm-hmm. And, as I say, if you come through a farmer's place or something, you give him five, you gotta cater to him a little, naturally.
Yeah, right. When you were a boy, where would your grandmother go shopping? In Constable?
Constable.
Would she go to Malone very often?
Not very often.
Mm-hmm. Most people didn't travel much in those days.
No. If you traveled anywhere, it was with a horse. Mm-hmm. And the sand was about 6 inches deep. You take a horse on a buggy with two people in it and went over the sand hill, which you come down. It took a pretty damn good horse to take two people in the sand up. The sand would come right up and drop down on your wheel like this.
Yeah.
In other words, it was considered a fair, decent day's work for a horse. You go from here to my own back.
What kind of clothing did you have as a boy? Knee pants or?
No. Most of them had knee pants going to school. But I was working outdoors. I had a pair of long pants and parable ball to them, keep them freezing.
Was your grandmother fussy about your personal cleanliness when you were young?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. How often did you take a bath in those days?
Well, depending on what you're doing. If you was working in the garden, or haying, or in the hop yard, you'd have to take a bath every night.
Hot water or cold?
Hot.
Otherwise, what, once a week?
Well, why, if he was working in something like up south, mm-hmm. hotel or something, why, once a week. Down here, it was pretty near overnight.
Did your grandmother believe in brushing their teeth and stuff like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And digging hell out of your ears.
You said your grandmother is very religious?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's Methodist?
Yeah.
What church did she go to here?
Methodist.
Oh, that's right. It's a Presbyterian, Methodist, and Catholic. Mm-hmm. Was that a large congregation, or?
Well, kind of a large congregation. These churches was full at that time. Of course, they're small churches. The Catholic Church was the largest. Now, the Methodist Church, I'd say there'd be 30, 35 people to a preaching service. Mm-hmm. And the same at the Presbyterian Church.
And how many did the Catholic about?
Well, we'll say a quarter more. I don't know where mm-hmm. you can go, but right. It was a bigger church. And there was 80% of the people in this town was Catholic, so.
When you were a boy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most of them were French or Irish or?
French
when you were a boy. When you were a boy.
Hmm?
When you were a boy, were there a lot of French people in this town?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Irish too.
A lot of Irish. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Americans, or Yankees, whatever you want to call them. But there's a lot of French that come from Canada and settled here.
Came across the border here?
Yeah, they come in, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Got their papers and come in here. And quite a lot of them was Protestants. What do you call them? Huguenots?
Huguenots.
Well, that's what they were.
Yeah, quite a few Huguenots. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was an old man who lived up on the Dineen Road. His name was De Goyne. He was a great old church member. And he had whiskers. He used to wear a little straw hat. And he had a piece of elastic, about an inch wide, black plastic, hitched to the hat and come down under his chin around his whiskers to hold his hat on. He, as I say, my grandmother, she was quite churchified. So I had to go to Sunday school in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then preaching services. And then they used to have what they call a class meeting. The old folks get up and tell what their troubles was or what they're doing and how they wanted to do more. And he was the leader of the class meeting. And he used to get up and he'd say, well, you folks have been having white bread all week. Today, he says, you're going to have Johnny cake. You know, French with a Johnny. Mm-hmm. And he'd start off singing. He'd say, some people think me wild or simple as a child. I am a child of glory. I heard that so damn much. That's the way he'd always start. Mm-hmm.
Were there many dances around here at night, or
all? Yes, there's quite a few. In hop picking time, I told you they had these hop kills where they used to dry the hops.
Right.
And they'd have a dance pretty near every night in a hop kill. Mm-hmm. Because people from Canada come up, the Indians come up from the Indian reservation, and there'd be a crowd to each one of the hop kills having a big dance.
Ah. Were the Indians well liked around here?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No trouble with them?
No trouble. Mm-hmm. No. I've done a lot of business with the Indians down the reservation, and I never done business with a nicer bunch of people than they were.
What kind of entertainment would there be at dances?
Well, square dances. Yeah. Didn't never do any waltzing or any of that. It was always square dance.
Do you remember some of the songs and tunes, names of them?
No, I don't know if they had any singing. Mm-hmm. They'd have a violinist there and so on, mm-hmm. play the old fiddle.
Was the Methodist minister, did he visit your house very often? Or?
They used to in them days, yes. They had a Methodist minister, and he had three churches, which they called this charge. He had this church at Constable, and Westville, and Trout River. He had to preach the three places. And then they had a prayer meeting here some night in the week, and one at each one of them during the week. Because they came, and by that time I'd got so I owned a horse and buggy, and they used to hire me to drive out to Westville in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, I'd take them to Trout River and back.
Was he a nice man? Or?
Yeah, they was all pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So you had quite a bit of religion when you were young.
Very a lot.
When did you start disbelieving all this?
When I, the more I went to church, the more I disbelieved it.
Oh.
If you want to get it that way.
Yeah. When you were very young, you started to question it, you mean?
Yeah, we'll say 17, 18 in there.
Mm-hmm. Did your grandmother have religious pictures on the walls or anything?
No. No, she had 2-3 Bibles. So on.
Did she read the Bible very often?
Yeah.
Read it to you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was there any special religious dress for her? You know, colored dress, no? Mm-hmm. Any other small religions around here that were informal more? Or
not at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Jehovah Witnesses are coming in here, so they haven't any church, but around.
Mm-hmm. So what year did you get married? How old were you?
I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
I was married in January the 26th. '89, I guess. I don't know. That's my birthday.
So you'd be?
1911 when I got married.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And who'd you marry? What was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Daisy Brockway.
Uh-huh. One of the many Brockways around.
Well, yes. At that time they lived in homes.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you live after you got married?
Before I got married, see, I worked at Loon Lake that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the fall I come home, and I heard about a job down in St. Timothy.
Where's that?
In Canada. They were building a Canadian Light and Power plant on the Cedar Rapids. And they were given $1.75 a day for 10 hours. And by God, that was a gold mine. So I hit right down there and I went to work. Now, would you want the history of the building?
Yeah.
It is a big building built over that. It was cement poured. And the windows, no windows in it at that time. It was just being built, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
They had cheesecloth over the windows. And the doors, well, it was open because it was big enough to let a freight train in. And there was about 2 inches of frost all over the building inside. And the only way you could do, it's so damn cold, but men was in there working. All the electric wiring was concaved in pipe.
Uh-huh.
See, you know, put the wires into the pipe and bend the pipe and put them into the wall. And they had what they call salamanders. Well, they're just oil drums with soft coal in them. You will go over and warm your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But of course that smoke was on the ceiling or on the walls, hooking at this dust. And that stuff was dropping off and it was just like whistle comes out of a chimney.
Ah.
After he's in there now, you're just as, your clothes are just as stiff as a board. And, you know, dirty as hell. They had a cheap building put up, just boarded and tar papered. And Chinaman done the cooking there. And they got so much of a meal to feed the men. And every time you had a meal, there was a fight in there. Great long table. And I remember this one time, there's a fella, we had sausage for breakfast, link sausage. He pricked into it and the maggots was in it. He jumped up and he took his teacup and he threw it clear down. He says, "You damn chimp," to the child, and he threw it the whole length of the table. Well, of course, the tea skittered all over everybody for a second. But there's a fight in there every meal, see? And I give you, that was one idea of the food, but there's a lot of it just the same.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give a damn, they got so much meal feeding you. Then they had another building that the men was to sleep in. And they had bunks in there, just board bunks on the wall. And they had wires the whole length of it. And everybody wore them great big heavy woolen socks. And stink like hell. At night everybody's feet was wet, you'd hang them up and you was in there. Well, when you opened the door to go in, that gust of hot air and smell would come out just like striking you in the face with a bottle of pneumonia. Only it smelled worse than pneumonia. It didn't have quite the same flavor. But anyway, I put the week in. And the man I was working with, he was one of the head electricians. I was just a helper. And he says, "I ain't going to stay here." He says, "So in only another week," he says, "I got to work another week." He says, "I got to have some money." So on Sunday, I took a notion to walk way up the road to Farmhouse to see if I could get a place to stay. And I come about a mile right on the banks of St. Lawrence, and I come to this nice-looking house. It wasn't elaborate, but it was nice, clean, you know. And I went to the door, and the man come to the door, and he couldn't talk English, and I couldn't say "we" in French and have it sound right. But I explained what I wanted, you know, like that, and he'd say, we, and then I motioned to the room, we. So he had a brother that was a priest, and he rented me, the priest wasn't there, see, he was off in the parish somewhere. So he rented me that room for $1.50 a week. And so there was a shed. Well, you couldn't go into a man's house with these clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a shed, kind of a summer kitchen, and he'd always have a stove, a great big stove in there, warm water, and I'd go in there and take a bath and hang my clothes on, and away we go. Well, then this fellow that I was working, he says, "Where are you staying?" So I told him. So he went up, and he got a room up there. And then there was another man that was married. His name was McKinney. He was a steam fitter from Montreal. He come up, and he got a room for him and his wife. Well, then when I got married, I get quite a kick out of it. I tell my son-in-laws that they're a cheap bunch of fellas. I says, when I was married, I took my wife to a foreign country for 6 months for a honeymoon. Well, I got married about 11 o'clock Sunday night. But I took the night train, right back down on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And we was working. Well, in the morning, we'd go out to this shed, put our clothes on, our work clothes, and we'd take a lantern and dog trot. The man with the lantern go ahead and follow our little path, and the others trail along behind. But then we got it fixed up so that we could get our meals up to this place. And it was a very clean place. It was nice. And the best of food, home cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I got married, as I say, then I got married at night. And went right back down, went to work the next morning.
Mm-hmm. So, took your wife with you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where did you meet your wife?
At Loon Lake. She was working up there.
Is she from Constable?
From Malone.
Uh-huh. In Brockish Mall. So how long had you known her before you married her?
About 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Did you go out quite often? Or?
Quite often.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go?
Oh, just for a little stroll or walk or some damn thing like that. Mm-hmm. A little boat ride.
Mm-hmm.
In the evening.
When did you have your first child? How long after you were married? How many years?
He was married in January. And the next year, on February the 2nd, we had a child.
Boy?
Girl. There she is right there.
Mm-hmm. And how many, and after that you had 13 children?
Yeah. 10 girls and 3 boys.
How was most of them about a year apart? Or
about 2 years apart.
2 years apart. How old were you when the last one was born? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Were you in your 40s?
Oh, I was in my 40s, yes.
Yeah. Did you like having so many children?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It, just step here and you can see the family.
Mm-hmm. With any children?
There was one, lost one at birth, little girl.
Mm-hmm. And he died after that?
No.
Too?
No.
No. Are they all still living?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many grandchildren do you have? Any idea?
Days! Oh, God, I didn't know. The wife and I were talking the other night. 26, 28 grandchildren.
You mean great grandchildren?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
God, I guess there's about 50 great grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Any great greats?
No.
No? I guess
that's. Yes, I have some great greats.
That'd be your...
Let's see. My daughter June, she had her child. And then she had a child.
And she got her child.
Huh?
There'd be four in there. Your daughter's was...
It was quite a job in them days. People say it's harder to get along than today than it was then. I don't see why it should be any harder today to get along if they want to live right. You know what I mean. Of course, today everybody's got to have a couple cars, and they've got to have a couple ski-doos, and they've got to have every damn thing they see.
Mm-hmm.
And they're earning good money. But when it comes Friday night, they get the pay. By the time they make 6 or 7 payments, they're broke. Well, in them days, you didn't get the money to begin with, but by Jesus, you lived within your means.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when my children got big enough to go to Malone, to high school, I had to take them up Sunday night, and my wife would make a clothes basket of food to last them maybe 2 or 3 days. Then they had a checking account.